Hello and welcome to the first episode of the all-new GAK Guitar Shop podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, but who joins me today?
Hello, I'm Joss John Allen.
And where do you work, Joss John Allen?
I work in the marketing department of GAK.
There you go. Just so you're aware, that is how we introduce everyone on the podcast. You start with your name and then what you do, so you can say that. Specifically, what do you do on the marketing department?
What do I do on the marketing department? I am in charge of the YouTube channel. So I do photography and videotography.
There you go. That's you've got to sort of say that in a nutshell. Let's go again, because of course I still haven't introduced the other person on the podcast. Hello and welcome to the GAK podcast, blah, 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 blah. Who is with me today?
Hello, I'm Joss, and I am in charge of the YouTube channel, videotography and photography.
Bang, that was great. And who else is joining me?
Hello, I'm Luke, and I'm one of the guitar buyers. I look after anything that isn't Ibanez, Gibson, Dean, or Fender.
Excellent, excellent. Well, welcome, gentlemen. You are both new additions to the podcast. Well, not you, Luke. You've done a couple with my predecessor, the one whose name will not be spoken.
Yes, the other one.
Yeah.
Yes, back from NAMM in January last year.
Yeah, you and...
Fell asleep on the last one.
you and Mark got to go out to NAMM last year. Well, it was not
2014.
NAMM. Yeah, 2014. You got to go out there and check
incredible.
It out.
It was brilliant.
It was brilliant. And you guys were doing podcasts after working like 14-hour days.
So. Hence the sleeping during the podcast. I didn't know whether I was coming or going.
Wake up.
We flew on the Thursday. Show started on the Friday. Worked the Saturday and then flew back on the Sunday.
That is absolutely ridiculous. Yeah. How long was the flight?
12 hours.
Oh. That is...
But and on the way... California, right?
Yeah. But on the way over, there was no one else on the plane.
What?
There was a 747 with like 10 people on it.
So
I got four seats, Mark got four seats.
Oh, so you could lay down and sleep if you wanted to. Yeah, I've done that.
That was the best flight I've ever had.
Did JAK fly you over in style?
Or did
you just get coached?
Yeah, they booked the entire plane, all the tickets. Business, not good enough for us. They said, we're having all of it.
A plane. That's how we roll at JAK.
Did I mention it was Air Force One?
You also, at NAMM, you were kind of responsible for one of my all-time favourite videos that we've ever uploaded to the JAK YouTube, which was the video where you got to meet one of your heroes, Ben Wyman.
Yeah, that's also one of my favourite videos.
Just because you are so giddy.
It took me about 5 takes. Like, everything else that entire time was just like, right, so tell me about it. Bang, done. Right, tell me about this. I genuinely, at one point, had to take a step back and go, I'm really sorry, Mr. Wyman.
Did you call him that?
Bit of a fanboy. No, I didn't actually.
Hello, Mr. Wyman.
I just said, I'm really sorry. I don't really do Starstruck, but this has kind of got me.
That's dope.
Like,
that's really cool.
He genuinely formed like part of my basis as a guitarist in sort of certain genres and things, and kind of took my playing in a totally different direction. So.
That's amazing to get to meet kind of your hero in that sense. Yeah. A lot of guitar players, heroes that would shape their playing, I guess, are the guitarists are either such superstars that almost definitely never meet them, or they're dead.
In which case they also almost definitely will never meet.
Exactly, almost definitely.
But yeah, like, he was just a really nice, humble guy. Got to chat to him about his instrument. Find out sort of why he designed a few bits.
Yeah, because he's gone to the Evertune Bridge, which is the last bridge in the world I would expect to see on a sort of hardcore band.
Well, yeah, it's just because they hold tuning so well.
Well, yeah, and I guess.
Obviously, I mean, sort of anyone that's heard Dillinger knows, I mean, it's not about soulful bending. and that's not really his style. And it's just great because he likes to throw himself about a bit on stage.
And you just guarantee that it's not going to slip, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. And you're just always in tune. Mm. Just brilliant. And now there's another redundant tech in America. So
yeah. I always thought...
Every time you fire a tech.
It was really weird to see that guitar come out not only with that bridge, but also as a chambered semi-hollow.
That was also...
The shape of the guitar as well. I wasn't expecting anything to come out of the X-Tone series from Ben Wyman.
That X-Tone's so unusual because it's kind of like a Les Paul Jaguar.
With the large bump on the top set, but then cut out further on the bottom.
And I mean, it's basically, I guess it's just so they've got a bit more going up the neck, so you've kind of got a bit more sustaining thing, like various basses, where you've got that extended upper sort of horn without the cutaway.
Yeah.
So you've got a bit more resonance there. It's sort of what I would think would be the origin of the design.
Yeah.
But yeah, he just likes that shape. He was playing the
He designed X-tone. The F hole as well, didn't he?
Yeah, which is a really weird shaped F
hole. Yeah. But
didn't he say he drew it on a napkin or something like that?
It's got most guitar ideas come like that, don't they? I know that Dimebag designed his by just drawing them on a napkin as well.
Oh, did he? Yeah, he actually drew something really nice and then folded it a lot.
Yeah.
It just ended up. He went, "Oh, I've made all these lines straight now. Let's make a star." So that worked.
On that topic, Joss, have you ever had the chance to meet a guitar hero of yours? Or, you know, I guess, you know, if Ben Wyman is kind of... I'm trying to give people a bit of an introduction to the two of you so they know where you're coming from, because I certainly think these podcasts are going to be very different from the podcast before, where everyone came from a very similar background and... Mm. A lot of the time agreed on everything. So I kind of want to give everyone a feel for where you guys come from. Have you ever met?
Yeah, I mean, with the benefit of the sort of style of music that I like, we're talking the realms of like super, super, super heavy music here.
Yeah.
The good thing is that most of the bands that I'm into don't really, they obviously have a following, but they're still playing the smaller venues. So most of the bands that I'm really into and like, I've probably met them all so far. Yeah. I mean... There's unbelievable amounts of... We had the awesome opportunity of having Ola England in store.
Yeah, that was great. I mean, an advantage to you, I guess, is that it seems to be through no real design, or at least no design that I'm aware of, all of our in-store events at GAK always seem to end up being metal guitarists. I guess metal music seems to be more heavily endorsed than other types of music.
Yeah.
I guess in sort of indie and rock and sort of other things, people just play Strats and Tellys. You know, Fender don't necessarily make specific ones for those people.
Yeah, I mean, the technical ability to be a proficient sort of metal guitar player or a heavier musician, like obviously... You know, you can't have someone come in from like a standard sort of indie style band and then sort of do the playthrough of their songs without the full band, like just demonstrating the guitar, you know?
I think it's just a different following of people.
Yeah.
It is, isn't
it? If you're going to get sort of people that are into guitars, they're going to be into sort of the heavier stuff.
Mm. Yeah.
Just, you know.
Just through gear nerdery, technical run. Music, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Gear nerdery, music nerdery, whatever. Nerd.
So hence why I guess the bulk of signature models comes out of that genre. I mean, you can both probably definitely prove me wrong, but I can't think of a famous metal guitarist that isn't playing a signature model of some form.
I think it depends on what style of metal we're talking about, really.
Obviously I'm talking about the sort of people that would do... like one of the GAK events.
Yeah, sure. I think we're definitely. But in answer to your question, I guess, yes, I have. There's a band called The Faceless. A guitar player called Wes Howe used to play for those guys. Now he doesn't. I think he's doing something with the guitar player from Between the Buried and Me at the moment. He was with ESP Guitars. He was with Jackson when I saw him with Faceless, then ESP Guitars, and I believe he's just moved over to Schecter Guitars now, and he's playing a Keith Merrow signature, but with a Floyd Rose on it, seven-string version. And I haven't seen that, so I think it might have either been built for him or it's something that's going to be released at some point. But I got to see The Faceless with a couple of bands in London, and I got to meet Wes, and that was a huge deal for me, considering he's my favourite guitar player.
So. Amazing. Wicked. Sweet.
Steve I saw me eat a chicken pie once.
What?
Really. Was working up at LIMS probably 5 or 6 years ago. LIMS, the London International Music Show,
for anyone that
doesn't remember.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'd taken a break, gone and bought a pie, was sitting in a fire escape. He did his grand entrance, walked through this massive hall with all the Steve Vai regalia on and all the garb and the headdress and the gem. Walked through this massive crowd of people, proper Spinal Tap moment, took the wrong door, walked out the fire escape, stood there, realised he'd gone wrong and had to walk back into the main hall and then cut back to wherever the stage was, wherever he was supposed to be going. Meanwhile, I just sat on a chair, sat on the stairs, eating my chicken pie.
Right. That is...
I went to that Steve Vai show on my own at the Concord. yeah. due to getting tickets via being at GAC, and I went there, and I think I stayed there for two songs, and then I went home.
Oh, no. See, I actually really love Vi. Like, he really there was another player that sort of prior to Ben and getting into the noise stuff, really shaped my playing. Sort of passionate of for the love of God and passion and warfare. I just incredible, and I love those things. But it was yeah, just amusing to see him
lost,
a bit completely lost.
Yeah, sort of amazing. In London XL, just not knowing where he was going.
So let's talk a bit about kind of the jobs you guys do for GAC again, just so I can introduce the two of you to it. So Joss, you're in charge of like photography and videography for GAK. So so I guess what sort of has there been anything that's especially stuck out to you that's been pretty cool that you've got to either photo or video recently? Have there been some cool bits coming in?
Yeah, I mean, considering that I'm a huge metal fan anyway, but. The acoustic guitars at the moment. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of acoustic guitars. I can appreciate them, but when it comes to
I love taking
photos of them though. Yeah. But, I mean,
which ones are these? They're all brown.
That's the thing. I had to go to Luke the other week and go, I'm not sure which one these are. So I took photos of them, went back up and was like, what
they
name?
All
they
the
all
same.
Look the same.
And they're all named with numbers.
Yeah. So when it came to checking out some of the newer custom build acoustic guitars that I needed to take photos of, they were incredibly pretty. So that's one of the benefits. But
what was that? Was that the Larive? I'm never sure how to pronounce.
No, it was the Taylor ones.
Yeah, yeah,
oh, really?
The Taylor custom build ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had some seriously crazy wood
so
tops.
What series is custom build?
The custom order they're. Taylor do what they used to call build to order, which they now call custom order, where you can basically just spec up whatever you want, and they start from about $3,000.
Whoa.
And you can just add
on.
So
did you spec them?
Yes. Got to go over to visit the Taylor factory in October, selected some nice woods, sort of chose a really nice piece of quilted mahogany and some lovely stripy rosewood, and again another really lovely stripy piece of Adirondack spruce and another really nice mahogany top. And yeah, they put together.
Amazing. Where is the Taylor factory?
San Diego.
Oh, right.
Oh, that's where you were in San Diego.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Sure I knew, but I forgot.
And yeah, got to do that. That was incredible. Got to meet Andy Powers and Bob Taylor. And
amazing.
What a name.
Andy Powers.
He should really just have Max as
Max
a child.
Max Powers, yeah.
Just one son. That's
strong.
It. But yeah, amazing. it was incredible getting to see the Taylor factory. It really is just out of this world. Mm. Like anything you've ever seen about any sort of like slightly old school looking factories, just forget any of that. Totally futuristic robots, craftsmen, perfect unison, working, building things. Like it was just incredible.
Oh, awesome.
Awesome.
Is it a really large scale in the Taylor factory? I always imagined everything to be quite small.
Well, it's not. As a guitar factory, it's pretty big. Uh-huh. But it depends what you sort of think, because some people seem to get a bit confused as to the scale of things and kind of think like car factories.
Yeah,
when you look at things and it's all like 100% automated. We're not saying about robots and things, like they've got a spray booth where sort of it's the body is charged and the paint is charged opposite to the paint, and they have no overspray, so they don't create any extra emissions.
Oh, amazing.
So it's things like that where they're thinking sort of ecologically.
A lot of factories are moving that way. We were talking on the podcast a while back about the Warwick factory, or last year. The Warwick factory, which is completely
carbon neutral.
And it's run on, it has giant fans in the ceiling, which force all the extra sawdust and offcuts from the guitar bodies onto the floor into these channels, these sort of drain channels in the floor, which then feed down into the basement where there is a furnace which provides all of the electricity.
Wow. For the whole of Germany.
Wow. But yes, exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, I always thought that was really cool.
It's pretty cool.
An excellent way for a company to work.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, as guitarists, we are incredibly conservative, but it is nice that there are forward-thinking out sort of people out there like Bob Taylor and like the people at Warwick kind of actually pushing stuff on.
Makes it more interesting when you're reading into the products as well, doesn't it?
Yeah,
Knowing that they may have helped that in some sort of way.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, the Taylor thing came about because of the California emission laws.
Of course.
They can't.
I love California.
Create sort of volatiles and push them into the atmosphere. So, say companies like Rickenbacker said, right, okay.
They just started making less, didn't they?
Yeah. That's why there's such a shortage, because they didn't want to put any effort into not creating noxious chemicals and putting fumes into the environment. They just thought, right, we'll cut back on the amount we make, and that's the way we account for it. Whereas Bob Taylor actually came up with a whole new way of doing things.
Amazing. How did Fender deal with it?
I think they just treat it in some way.
Oh, really?
Okay. I mean, because obviously it's still all built in Corona.
Yeah.
And they're still churning out loads of guitars.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think they've just done whatever they need to do and they sort of treat the chemicals afterwards.
Mm. Amazing.
Because, yeah. I mean, they're using a lot more poly, aren't they? Instead, even on the American standards now as well. So, yeah. I mean, hardly any of their guitars are using, you know,
nitro finishes,
or anything like that. And I think if they are using nitro, they are sending it to maybe Mexico or something like that to get it finished or sprayed.
No. All the nitro stuff is still finished in the States.
It is still finished in the States.
Yeah. But, yeah, sort of they now do nitro specific in ways. Mexico for, like, the road worn.
Yeah, sure.
All the nitro finish mix stuff.
Yeah, and all the limited edition stuff that they've thrown out on the classic player series.
Yeah.
The FSRs and stuff.
Yeah. I imagine then, Joss, you've probably stolen Luke's thunder with that one, choosing the acoustics is the cool thing that...
Yeah, but they are incredible.
Yeah. So I was going to throw the same question to you as a purchaser, if anything interesting had come up recently, but...
Well, I think the thing most interesting at the minute is probably just because I didn't get a chance to play it, is one of the little Digitech trios.
I was so against this as an idea. When I saw the video that got put out, not I think the one that we shared was much better, where they got
some of the first videos were
I think
awful.
I saw, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I find it difficult to think unless you find someone that really knows what they're doing with it, I find it difficult to think about what its uses.
Yeah,
I think it'd be great for songwriting.
I agree.
Songwriting, yeah.
When there's a new video out, or new-ish video, the newest video out for it, where they've got some fella in who's great at that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And he's showing how it can be used really, really well. But some of the videos I saw before, I was a little bit like, Digitech are kind of known, I guess, more for churning out pedals than being innovative with pedals.
They have been in the past. Like, they're really changing that around now, though. The last, like the Obscura, the Polara,
the Mosaic.
I love the artwork on those pedals as well.
Yeah, like they've actually really sorted out what they're doing. And the next lot of stuff coming out, they're doing like that Bone Shaker overdrive with like split parametric mids and things.
Yeah, that looks great.
They look incredible. Like, I just want to get to give them a play.
Mm. Yeah.
The trio, when it first came out and we saw those first videos, I also thought it looked terrible.
It didn't stop you from purchasing 160.
which
admittedly sold in a week.
Five days. Yeah.
Which is ridiculous. So we never got to... I was speaking to Joss when they came in and I saw how many we'd got and I was like, Joss, I think maybe you need to spend an afternoon with a trio. Maybe work out...
Luke's done a bad one again.
Yeah. See if you can figure out
Way of making it sound good and get a video up, because we're going to be sitting on these for a long time. But
I did. Yeah, I went and messed around with it. Come back and they're all gone.
Yeah.
I did exactly the same thing. They came in. I was like, yeah, I might nick the demo one. No, we haven't got a demo one left.
They've gone already. Have you ordered more, though?
Oh, yeah.
So we've got loads
of
coming in.
That was my next thought.
But what amazing thing to be so popular. I mean, I think it's great because I guess it's new. I guess it's something totally different.
Yeah, well, I mean, they've sort of taken, like, the harmony recognition technology they had in all the Vocalist pedals. And then beyond that, it's just about finding a beat, I guess.
Yeah.
And putting the two together.
Yeah.
And then in a box with, five knobs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
brilliant.
Yeah, it is good. I mean, it's got some odd functions on like the how you flick between two different riffs has to be done by hand.
No. You can plug in an extra foot switch.
Oh, you can. Oh,
yeah,
right.
They do an FS3X, and they also do something called the FS300, which is slightly cheaper but discontinued. So we've bought all of the FS300s that were remaining
of
in the country.
You
we've got all of those in stock now. And the FS3Xs are out of stock until July. Sales pitch bit done. trios, you can switch between them, and there's three buttons, so you can select each phrase.
All right, amazing.
And then go between,
what
verse,
ridiculous
chorus.
Pedal. We're definitely Listeners, definitely check out some videos. Try and find the good ones from the bad ones, because it's definitely a pedal that can be used badly. But I think as a writing tool, it's a brilliant piece of kit. So check out the Digitech Trio. I guess, guys, we should come around to talking about your setups in this bid to let the people understand you. So maybe if we start with Joss, can you talk us through what sort of guitar amp pedal setup you're playing at the moment?
Okay. For the past 3 years, I've been using digital amplification. So we're talking, go on.
Digital amplification.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we're talking Kemper profiling amps, and we're talking DV Mark multi-amps.
The DV Mark multi-amps is actually what you use for the bulk, sort of 90% of the video demos that you shoot as well.
Because I can get, apart from miking up the cabinet that we go through, I can get a direct feed straight out of the back from it into our recording device, and sort of gives you a really, really good sort of essence of whatever I'm playing it through.
Exactly. It allows you to quickly select a lot of different sounds and add a little bit of modulation here and there, rather than us having to, every time we want to demo a guitar, having to unbox 3 or 4 pedals and set them all up as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Within that situation as well, I guess it's good having the consistency of knowing that you're going through the same thing.
As opposed
to the mic being in a slightly different position.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I really like. I tend to record into guitar rig at home, and I just like the fact that I can have different sessions weeks and weeks apart, and the guitar tones are all consistent.
I really like the way your guitar sounds on the on those little sessions that you have.
It took me 4 years of amp modding to get back to it. Getting that existing in real life was a lot of work.
I really don't like Stratocasters at all, but I really like the way you make Strat sound. Oh, I've just let people know what your guitar is. I'll beep it and then we'll sorry, coming back to Josh. So you're using
I've been using the Kemper and the DV Mark. The Kemper for live situations and the DV Mark mostly for recording, until as of recently, where I started using the DV Mark for recording and live, just because I think it sounds a lot more natural and a lot more real than the Kemper. Uh-huh. Stop your giggling, boy. And then...
But you've recently gotten a new addition to
I did. As I said, because I've been using them for about 2 to 3 years now, I started having a hankering for a valve-driven amplifier again. So I purchased myself a EVH 5153 50-watt head, the white one.
The white one.
Nice and dirty after a couple of shows it will be.
Yeah.
I bought one of those, and I had a rehearsal with it, and it is a completely different feel, obviously. Yeah. I mean, I've stood by the digital amplification for such a long time now.
Do you find them less controllable, the valve amps?
Definitely. I mean, they're a lot more haphazard in terms of, only because my ear has got so used to the consistency, as Luke said, the consistency and the way that I've dialed it in. Yeah. These amps, for live and recording, there's no sort of mix match of tones. I go home and I record, and then I go out and I play live, and it sounds the same.
I would have thought that the digital amps are just a bit better. No matter what room you're in, they're always going to sound the same. And the valve amps are just so dependent on so many different, temperature of the room, how long it's been on.
But then sometimes that depends on the amp itself as well. I mean, Boogie are notorious for being so tweakable that you take an amp and put it in a different room and it sounds totally different.
Yeah.
And I certainly found that when I used to have an old Nomad and a Formula and I'll sort of...
I definitely agree with that. I've had a single and a dual rectifier and both of them.
You can just do anything with it, but not always quite find where you want it
Where you want it perfectly. So I bought this EVH and I'm really, really happy with it at the moment. Playing live and rehearsals, it sounds great, sounds huge. Pedal-wise, not really jamming through much apart from a tuner. Because I've been using these digital things, I've got a MIDI keyboard.
I've got a MIDI keyboard.
A MIDI foot switch, which I've been using to change my channels while my patch is on the DV Mark. But now I've gone back to this EVH. All I've got literally is it's a 4-button foot switch, a tuner, and a bit of delay in the effects loop.
What delay are you using in the effects?
The TC Electronic Flashback 4.
Oh yeah, that's a good solid choice.
Yeah, it's awesome. I really like it.
But sticking with the amp drive, you're not putting a Tube Screamer or anything like that through the front end?
Nothing.
Or do you find that, you don't really need to with the
EDX? Not with that thing. No, not with that thing. That thing is it's got so much gain on the red channel, it's ridiculous. I only use the second channel anyway, because don't use a lot of gain in my band, because I play in like a pop punk style band.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in terms of like having a lot of drive, I don't need it. That's my pedal wise, that's my amp sort of rig, and then guitar wise I've always been a Les Paul guy.
I need to give a disclaimer here at the start of Joss Allen's guitar collection, because Joss Allen has owned more guitars than
anyone else in the country.
I was trying to think of a really good that would do, yeah, but probably Joss Allen's owned more guitars than GAK have sold this year. So, but talk us through sort of what you're running at the moment. It's true you have always been a Les Paul guy. I'll agree with that.
Yeah, yeah. I won't go through all the guitars that I have owned.
Don't do all the ones you have owned.
Edited highlights.
Do the best ones of what you've got, and maybe any great ones that you've owned.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so, I mean, my favourite...
Three best that you've got now.
Yeah.
The guitar you missed the most and the guitar you were most glad to get rid of.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, cool. So the three best I own now is always going to be... My number one choice is always going to be my Les Paul Studio. That was my first ever proper good guitar that I got for my birthday.
Which studio is it?
It's just a Gibson Les Paul Studio.
What year? Do you know what year?
2009.
Oh, right. Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Black one, gold hardware.
So what pickups are in the 2009 series?
They're the 490Ts and the 490Rs. I think they're the same ones that come out of a Les Paul Custom.
Right, okay,
cool. It's like 495 and 498.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, yeah. So that's always going to be my number one. I've snapped the headstock off it like three times. Had it re-glued. It's got like no finish on the back due to it just rubbing on belt buckles and jeans and all that sort of stuff. So it's rad as hell. My other one at the moment is a new acquirement, which is my Yamaha SG700S.
So basically Yamaha doing the Les Paul.
Yeah, it's the Les Paul killer. Yeah, but it is the Les Paul killer. I much prefer it to the Les Paul.
Really? I think they are brilliant. They weigh a metric ton.
I can't believe
how heavy they are.
The 700S is chambered. So it's
they filled it with heavier stuff.
Which I absolutely adore, with the coil tapping and everything. It just plays and sounds absolutely incredible. And the third one, which has always been like a dream to own, is my Music Man Albert Lee.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah, what a great guitar. Great finish you got as well.
Yeah, the coral red,
which is basically Fiesta red.
Yeah, Fiesta red. Yeah, with the solid rosewood neck. With a satin finish on it, so it's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's great.
What was the other choice? The three that I have now.
Guitar you miss, or the guitar that you regret selling the most?
The guitar I regret selling the most. Oh, dude, there's so many guitars that I genuinely don't think.
Pick one!
I can't remember. Okay. I genuinely can't remember.
And what about the one that you were happiest to get rid of?
Happiest to get rid of.
I wonder if I could guess that one, but go on, say it.
Oh, no, man, you won't guess this one. No. For some strange reason, I think I bought a Stag Jazzmaster. So I think I was happiest to get rid of that.
All right.
What was yours?
I thought it might be the Flying V that you had.
That's my biggest regret. There it is. That's my biggest regrettable sell. A Gibson Flying V.
Please tell me you had a reverse V.
No, mate, I wish not. The ZZ topping it. No, the Gibson Flying V was my biggest regret. And I'll tell you what, in my lifetime, I'm only 24, I've had three of them.
Oh, that's ridiculous. That is... Okay.
I've had three of them. I had the satin finish one, the more affordable line. I had a white one because I talked to Pat Heath at one point who works at BIN.
Did it have gold?
Was
gold
it hardware? A white like 67? Were you trying to be Hendrix?
Yeah, with the ebony fretboard. And then I sold it, and then less than a few months later, I bought a cherry red one. So, that was my biggest regret of getting rid of my cherry red Flying V, I think.
And they say as humans, we are an adaptable species.
I haven't evolved a single bit. Yeah.
Okay, awesome. Well, Luke, what about you then? I guess that's kind of sums you up, Joss, doesn't it? For sort of
Just about, I'd say.
For
everything. What I have now, what I've had, and
I mean, you've had lots of other stuff as well. Obviously, you've played tellies and things like that in the past, but generally speaking, you're a humbucker kind of fella.
Yeah, it's like that thickness, that darkness, the power that you can achieve from something like that.
And you've had some more metal orientated guitars as well. Things like the Ola England.
Yeah, I've had the Ola England.
And stuff like that has also been sort of the sort of thing that you've played. But yeah, I mean, for sort of someone who's tried a bit of everything, I think probably you must be the most prolific guitarist here at GAC for owning stuff. So certainly as these podcasts progress and we're talking about new gear, we will almost always be talking about a guitar that Joss Allen has played and or bought at some point. Luke Taft, why don't we talk about your setup? You might as well do it in the same order that Joss did, so work backwards, so from the amplifier.
Amps, right. At the moment, the amp I'm using is an old twin, sort of early 80s Revere.
Could not get further away from the DV Marking Kemper.
Early 80s. I think it's an 82, as I was saying, Revere designed. One of the sort of, when Fender went back from CBS and they were sort of trying to get back their sort of quality and get back to putting together some really nice stuff, it was kind of the last series of on sort of Islet board amps they did, and I wanted something to mess around with and mod. So I spent several years with that in pieces. Finally got it back together a couple of months ago.
Is that the Tweed one?
No. It's Blackface.
Yeah, I didn't know there was a Tweed twin.
Well, there were Tweed twins back in the 50s.
Oh, right.
And then they sort of went to blonde and brown face and up to Blackface. But yeah, so that's the amp. It's technically not really a twin so much inside as the drive channel is like that of a Lone Star Classic, and the clean channel's sort of beefed up.
Is that because you've modded it?
Yeah.
Because you like doing that, modding stuff like that. Didn't you build your own amp head at one point?
I built a few amps, yeah. I've got like a Fender 5E3 Deluxe style thing that I used to work in another shop, and our piano technician did a bit of servicing on a local church hall. I've often thought that word didn't have enough syllables. did a bit of work in there, and they wanted him to spec up a new PA, and he went and looked at what their PA was, and it was sort of an early 50s valve thing with two 6V6s, a couple of 12AX7s, and it had happily sat there working for their sort of sermons and things for the last 50 years.
What?
Genuinely.
It's been some rock and roll sermons.
So anyway, he took it out and sort of gave it to me because it was basically worthless. Right. I did a few tests on the transformers. The transformers were good. The circuit was absolutely shot. Every capacitor was totally open, leaky, whatever. So yeah, took everything out, put in a Fender 5E3 Deluxe, and that's a little recording amp I use for a few bits.
Sweet. Awesome. Amazing.
Done a few other sort of mods and things.
Can you play metal on it?
You can. It takes Les Pauls very well. So twins the amp at the minute. Although I'm waiting on stock to become available on the little Roland Blues cubes.
I
think every single
person. I had a good go on one
of
those. They're really cool.
Did you see the head though and cab?
Yeah.
It's a 410.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
It's good that they've done it as a head and cab and haven't tried to do another 4x10 combo because I think everyone's had enough of those.
Yeah.
Like, let's put more speakers in this amp and an amp. Let's put it all in one box.
Yeah.
I don't know why Marshall didn't do 8x12 combos, if I'm honest.
Oh, yes, that's what you want.
I'm sort of looking at getting one of those because I'd like an amp that I can use at home and at practice.
So what is the blonde thing that you've always got?
I sold that. That was a 62 Bandmaster cab.
Oh, right.
Just the cab, was it?
Yeah. That was just the best cab. Like, really lively.
And so I sold it.
Well, it's too lively. Like, because it was finger jointed pine instead of sort of nice dead sort of particle board or ply or something. It just sort of resonated a bit too much, and it had its own character.
Right.
And you sort of had to kind of work with that. And also, it had been cut up. It was supposed to be sort of sealed back and sort of lined with foam, and someone in the past had cut the back half open.
Right, I see.
So it was sort of a semi-open back thing. And although it did sound great for some stuff, as I say, it was a little bit too lively is the only thing I can think of. It sort of had its own tone that it imparted on things, and I wanted something a bit flatter. So anyway, flogged that. Was using that with an old Fender Tone Master, which I flogged a while back. And I was going to buy one of the Supersonic 100 heads, which Fender...
I thought that was your plan.
Yeah. Like, I really like the flexibility. Being a bit of a tinkerer, I like the fact you can play around with the bias settings really easily, and you can sort of tweak things to be really hot or really cold in terms of the power amp settings.
Yeah.
And you can either run it as like a really tight, nice controlled high gain amp, or like a really loose sounding sort of bluesy bassman, and you just do anything with them. Annoyingly, Fender discontinued them, and then Roland brought out the Blues Cubes, where you can basically do a similar thing, and they don't weigh a ton.
Yeah.
So, have you had a go on it yet?
Yeah. Well, we filmed a video, and then the bloody thing got corrupted. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
we did. Oh, this is.
I spent a whole afternoon filming a video with a pre-production prototype.
I'm really glad that we're announcing this on the podcast so that all our listeners know how incompetent. Actually, no, it wasn't me. It was my predecessor.
Who was it?
It was Mark that lost the footage. Yeah.
And just to let you guys know, yeah. I wasn't looking after the YouTube channel at that point.
I'm always the last guy.
Yeah, it was him. I tell you what, I don't even think we told Jeff from Roland, and he listens to these podcasts. So it's done now anyway.
Well, if he hasn't noticed,
true.
Jeff, why haven't you called to ask where the video is? Yeah.
But yeah, Jeff did bring a pre-production model Blues Cube all the way down here for us to film, and we spent half a day filming Luke playing it and
spending so long because
do you know what actually happened? That it was the live podcast that night, the one that it was the Christmas podcast that we did in the store, and Mark got the H6 and everything and deleted everything off of it to make sure we had enough footage. Sorry, the recording device we use is a Zoom H6. He deleted everything off of it so that he had enough footage to get through the whole evening.
He told me the video just didn't come out.
Oh. I feel really bad now.
So we've now smack talked the old podcast crew enough, I think.
Oh dear.
So yeah, gonna.
Is that the one with the Eric Johnson tube that you can put into a rack of it?
Capsule. Yeah. The capsule.
It looks like a tube.
Yeah.
I'm super stoked to hear what that sounds like.
I'm sort of intrigued by the Roland take on it, where they've made an amp where you can tweak anything and make it sound like anything, but because it all gets so intense in terms of what you have to do in terms of the editing, they've kind of sort of basically re-put all of that into a little sort of faux valve that you plug in and then it reconfigures the entire amp.
That's great. What a great idea. It's really ingenious amp manufacturing.
It's interesting.
In a sort of industry sort of amp manufacturer, I guess, is quite a relatively limited or sort of not stagnant, but there's only so many places that people are pushing boundaries, and this is just for a company that other than, you know, for busking amps and for great quality practice amps, Roland amazing. But it's not really their forte so much anymore.
It's just, I guess it's a shame that it costs so much, but that sort of shows how much money, how much effort and time they've put into making it good.
Ah, so you say it costs so much because it's digital. And you don't think digital should be as much as value.
No. All I mean is the little capsule.
Right.
The amps, I think, are really good value for money.
Yeah.
Like, I forget, it's sort of 400 and something.
Yeah, exactly. So it's the same price as a Blues Junior, and I think... given the choice of the two, I would take a Cube every day of the week.
Mm. Yeah.
Although, which is saying something, because the Junior is without a doubt our most popular amplifier.
Yeah. Yeah, especially the new sort of black face. I say new, sort of couple of years old now.
The black panel ones. The threes.
The threes sound wicked. The silver face, the old ones were always a bit bitey.
As well as that, after a small amount of time of gigging it and playing it and rubbing the black off, you're just looking at a mirror and you're like, oh, I don't know where I am now on the board, you know, trying to find a level, and you're like, what number am I on?
Oh god. If we move on to pedals.
Yeah, go for it.
Oh, Jesus.
He's only just got to pedals. Yeah, how is he taking longer than you? actually, Luke's pedals board isn't that big.
Oh. No, this will take no time. Two compressors, two drives, two delays,
whoa.
Reverb.
We need to go back to the start there.
Well, no, they're just compressors.
What on earth do you need two compressors for? I mean, bear in mind, compression is my thing. I don't like that I've chosen someone for the podcast who likes compression as well.
Compression is your thing. It's also Billy Sheehan's solo album, I believe.
It is a great album. Compression is probably my favourite Billy Sheehan solo album.
That was the one that they played some tracks off when I saw Sheen play with Vi in about 2000.
All right. Yeah. He also has a solo album called Holy Cow.
Really?
Yeah.
Coley Howe.
So, pedals. So you got what compressors do you use?
A TC Vintage Comp.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the same, am I allowed to say this, as a T-Rex Comp Nova.
Yeah, I'm sure you are.
Even down to the detail that the board says Comp Nova on it. T-Rex, TC, both Danish. Yeah. T-Rex built them for TC back in the day when TC wanted to do more pedals, but before they got their current sort of production up and together.
Yeah.
Wicked sounding, really nice, transparent, subtle boost. I tend to use that when I want a little bit of compression and when I'm sort of going clean. Then I've got a Barber tone press, which is parallel compression, that I use when I want something a little bit more aggressive in terms of the comp.
You do quite a lot of finger tapping in what you do. Yeah, so I guess those compressors...
can really clean it up, can't it?
Have you got one that you especially click on for your finger tappy moments?
It depends how loud I need to be. If it's tapping that I sort of struggle with, that I in terms of level, then it's the tone press.
Yeah.
Because that I just really need to boost.
Yeah.
And then the other one, when I can do a bit more and I'm sort of hitting a bit harder, is the TC.
You play quite unconventional tuning on your guitar as well. Do you find the compressors help that sort of evening out, I guess, the drastic change in string tension from what you do?
I hadn't really thought about it, but quite possibly.
Yeah.
I mean, I tend to use the compressors more as boosts.
Really?
Yeah. Right.
But so they're not always on?
No. Well, as boosts that cap, if you see what I mean. It's not always... It's sort of... Sometimes when you're doing lots of tapping in kind of like a big sort of four-piece band, the tapping will get lost a little bit.
Yeah.
So you want to boost it up.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden you find you've got loads of gain because sort of your levels have jumped up a bit and everything gets a bit mushy. So the compressor just doesn't bring all the loud stuff out. So it's,
I
mean, basically I use it as a compressor.
Right.
So we've talked on the long way round of explaining what compression does.
I wish I'd left it now as just I use two compressors.
And then run from those into a Boss PS5, which at the moment
the
I only...
pitch shifter.
Yeah.
Harmonist. That's the 7, isn't it? The Harmonist. The
PS6 is the super six, shifter. Yeah. This is the one that came before that.
Right, yeah.
That I use for... At the moment, it's mostly just used as an octave.
Right.
But there's a couple of sort of riffs and tunes where I use an expression pedal into it and bring in different intervals to sort of... to play riffs on, essentially. So cool. There's like one little riff where I play a note and then bring in the fifth above it.
Right.
And then slide and then take the fifth out and do that. So it's a bit... woo, 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 woo.
Excellently
great
described.
Impression. Yeah.
You're ridiculous.
Can you edit that out?
No.
It's sort of a bit like sort of Touching Tongues by Vi, but really bad.
Right, I see.
So none of the ability, but all of the effort.
Right, got it.
That's next. And then I run into a full tone full drive, which I just use for adding a bit of grit. I tend to keep the drive quite low on it, so sort of maybe about 9 o'clock. And then I use the boost on that when I want a little bit more grit. And then run into a Boss SD1W, the Wazacraft.
Oh, the Wazacraft.
Yeah, that is just the best overdrive I've ever used for stacking on top of another overdrive.
Mm. Really?
Yeah, sometimes drives get really fighty and don't really work well with others. Whereas that one, I keep it in the custom mode and set really hot, and just everything goes crazy when I turn it on, and it just sounds absolutely incredible.
Brilliant. They're a great pedal, the Wazacraft things.
Yeah.
I don't know... I don't know how much sort of impact they've had on the drive world. It's such a tough market.
It's such a saturated world.
But
I'm sorry.
And of course, I guess Boss are known as the benchmark for everything, rather than the other end.
Yeah, yeah, moving towards the boutique side of things instead.
Yeah. Boss are like your standards of everything, and then everyone else makes stuff that's weirder versions of it.
Mm. Yeah,
so if you want
yeah.
something safe, go to Boss. If you want something crazy, go elsewhere. But with this Wazacraft stuff, it's sort of doing both.
Yeah, totally. And it just, I was blown away when I sort of plugged them in the first time. Just that and the blues driver.
We actually done that together, didn't we? That when they first brought them in,
remember? Yeah. Again, Jeff brought them down. Had a play around in the shop.
Yeah, I think whether it be the Wazacraft ones or anything, the SD1 has always been such a good stacking overdrive pedal.
I mean,
even for like playing guitar solos, having a really overdriven amp, but maybe just not enough for soloing, use an SD1 because they're not, you put it on a clean channel, they're not super hot at all, are they?
No.
Put it on top and it just sounds
just absolutely
awesome.
Mint.
Yeah. So I need to try the Wazacraft one, really.
So yeah, use that for chunky riffs and then run out of that and into the amp. And then in the loop, I've got a Boss DD20, a Hall of Fame Mini, and a Digitech Timebender. Mm. Timebender, again, for more sort of harmonist, sort of pitch-shifted delays. because it does like rhythmic sequences and stuff.
Yeah, big fan of the Time Bender.
Yeah, yeah.
Does everything that Strymon does and for a fraction of the price.
A fraction of the price, and it adds loads of audio artifacts. Yeah. It's great. It's got all these trippy little things. It's the kind of, I guess, like the whammy of the delay world, in that it's got its own character and it's got very much its own delayed tone.
Yeah.
And if you sort of work with it, it's great.
Yeah, it's yeah. I think they're brilliant pedals. Probably one of the... I mean, obviously you use one. The guitarist in my band used one.
I didn't realise that.
And
the guitar player in your band uses every single pedal.
He does
pedal
use
ever.
All the pedals, yeah. he's cut it down to 19 pedals on his board now, down from his 23, which was the highest.
Took
point.
Four off. For anyone else, that would be a pedal board.
Yeah. Also took four people to carry that
and,
thing.
And another sort of big pedal board user is Dan from Cleft as well. He uses Time Benders quite a lot, and I just think I love that sound, and they're such a noticeable, once you know what a Time Bender does, it's one of those pedals that you will notice on records. Not that anyone uses them, because
in 20 years though, people will want those things.
They will.
The thing I like most about it is because it's intelligent pitch shifted harmonies. You play in a note, it gives you the pitch shifted harmony, and then if you move to another note, it confuses the harmonies it's stored. So you can sort of trick it and make it warble and do weird things.
Amazing.
And
do we still have them?
No, they don't exist. No, they don't exist catalog anymore. But you can do silly things with them.
It was amazing. We actually did a great sale on them when they did come
in. Because we got a small amount of them in, didn't we?
Yeah, well, Luke, again, I mean...
Bought hundreds.
On this podcast, we basically just talked about the times that Luke has just bought massive amounts of discontinued items. Digitech announced that they were discontinuing them, so Luke bought all of them in the world. And we were selling them for, like, £99, and I think when they came out, they were just under £300 or £250, something like that. They were a chunk of money for a digital delay.
They were loads. I mean, they were up there with DD20s and Strymons and stuff. I mean, obviously, I think Digitech brought them out to compete with the DD20 when Boss did the dual pedal range.
Of course.
And sort of everyone went into that format of pedals for a bit, and then they sort of didn't always work for everyone, so they sort of discontinued them and had loads of stock in.
Yeah. So we bought it all.
I went a bit mad for them.
So sorry, everyone on the podcast, if you did miss the Time Bender sale. It was great, and we all bought one.
I had mine already.
Oh,
I was already
a convert.
Why do you think I bought several hundred of them?
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
I believe in you.
I use that, and then the DD20, which, as well as being just a really versatile, good core drive delay pedal, it's got a 23-second delay ceiling. So as long as you've got a drummer that's sitting on a click track, you can set a delay time, and it auto-loops for you.
Oh, wow.
If you keep the feedback low, it'll just keep the delay going, so you don't have to worry about tapping in and out.
Brilliant. Mm. Oh, that's really
pretty
useful.
Cool.
Yeah, because I'm really bad at being in time.
Both of you use delays in the loop, which I think the loop was pretty exclusively not used by any of the guys on the...
love it.
No, I love the loop.
Why?
Because you can use more cables.
Well, exactly. This to me seems like a huge annoyance with setting up your pedal board at a gig.
You know how when you're sort of touring and playing loads of shows, you're sort of your case of leads waxes and wanes with how many cables are in it.
Yeah.
Like you play a few shows and you maybe accidentally steal a few cables, and you play a few more and you have a few nicked, and you're like, oh, I've only got four guitar leads, and then all of a sudden you've got like 20.
Yeah.
When my last band finished touring, my case was round full. So I've got a lot of cables to use.
So it's just an excuse to use them, really.
So that's why.
I've got one guitar lead that's 60 foot long.
Needed.
Like, why did anyone make that? Why does that exist?
We should plug that in and hear, like, the tone depletion just from amp to guitar.
Yeah, just to see how that sounds with the weakest guitar possible.
I mean, from what I noticed from using the effects loop with my delay is that in the front end of the amp, the delay is incredibly aggressive. No matter how much I have the mix lower, because I mean I'm only using the delay for certain specific bits of ambience when it comes to the cleans and stuff like that, so I just want a small amount of repeating just to give it a little bit of airiness and space. So if I put it in the front end, it almost feels as if it just covers up my guitar tone, no matter how much I have the mix low. And then if I put it in the effects loop, all of a sudden I can have it pointing at 12 o'clock and it's exactly where I want it. It's controllable right. and it's there, but it's not prominent. And that's why I love the effects loop so much.
I see. I guess fine if you're only ever using the delay on its Todd, I guess. I guess there's not much that comes off the delays in a...
Put it last. But the thing that's nice about putting them in the loop is that they come after all your drive, including the amp drive. Obviously, normally on a pedal board, you put it after your overdrive, so you're overdriving before, so you're not increasing the gain going into the gain.
I might actually have to start using the loop soon, because I was going to get one of these.
Because we're bullying you.
No, yeah. Because of the
Joe, they can buddies. All hear you out there. Anyone listening to this knows we're not bullying you. Shut up.
Now, I was thinking about getting one of these new Orange Obi-Wan 500 bass amps, and I really like the drive sound on it. And to be honest, just as a bass player, I've never had the opportunity to use amp drive because it doesn't exist for bass players. So I'm like, oh yeah, maybe I'll just sell my £250 Sans amp drive pedal and just use the amp drive of it. But of course, I'm going to have to put my delay through.
Yeah, if you start stacking up delay in front of the drive, it starts sounding really mushy. And like I was saying, I do sort of looping stuff where I sort of layer up different guitars, different guitar parts, and doing those in front of the drive just starts sounding really messy.
Yeah.
And this way, as Josh was saying, I've got a lot more control over levels, and I can sort of bring things in and out, and it works a lot better.
Yeah, I imagine so. Well, there's something exciting going on out there. Cool. So, I guess this brings us on to guitars for you.
Yes. As you mentioned earlier, I play a
Stratocaster.
Yes. Sometimes I think I'm the only person in Brighton that plays a Strat.
That's because Strats are the least cool of all guitars. They are like the ultimate. They are the Cliff Richard of guitars.
It's all right though, because mine's black and originally had a white scratch plate with a maple board.
That's true. You've got a really nice one ply black plate on it, which looks great.
An old friend from up in Reading one day made me a new scratch plate. It's enamelled aluminium.
Amazing.
It's just the best scratch plate.
Oh man,
that is the best scratch plate.
We've hit a high level of geekdom. We're all comparing scratch plates that we brought in.
I've had a few different scratch plates in my time. So anyway, yeah, I took the original parchment off. It's a 2001 Strat that I bought new. It's the only guitar I think I've kept for that long, ever since I started playing.
Really,
playing about 20 years. So yeah, it's just that guitar I always go back to. Every recording I've done in the last sort of 10 years has had it on it somewhere.
Oh, really?
Blimey. Yeah, like all the clean parts are always that Strat. Even in my old noise band, everything has that Strat on it somewhere.
I thought it was a newer acquisition for you because, of course, you used to play Ibanez RGs.
Yeah.
And which actually you used to play as well, didn't you, Joss?
Yes. Yeah, I've had two. I had a RG550, which purple
was,
one.
Yeah, that was great.
I had a purple mirror plate.
Yeah, yeah.
I had it in yellow.
Speaking
and black.
Of scratch plates, yes, that was a great a scratch
mirrored
plate.
Mirrored purple scratch plate.
Was that an RG550 DX STP of some form or something?
Dude, I have no idea. I just know that it was rad.
It was rad until you had to restring it, yeah.
And then I had the white version, but with it was a newer model with a rosewood fretboard instead of maple. I think that's
gold
why I bought
as
the
well,
gold hardware. Yeah. I bought the RG550 because I wanted an Ibanez RG with a maple neck.
Yeah.
And that's why I bought that one. And I found it, and it was awesome.
Just those Floyd Roses are just...
Yeah, that's why it was awesome for a really small amount of time.
Yeah.
It was awesome until I played a show, and you break a string, and I'm like,
you always break them at the bridge, though, and if you're quick... You can restring and put it back in quicker than you could put a new string on like a Strat or a Les Paul or something.
Yeah, yeah. I guess I just got super, super flappy playing live. You're like, I've broke a string! And everyone's looking at you, waiting for you to do something.
See, that's exactly why when I used to play RGs, I had three of the same in different colours.
Yeah, three of the same.
I had an RG550 DY, obviously the classic. If you're going to have RGs, you've got to have an RG550 DY. It was 94. I had an 87 RG550 Road Flare Red and had a 91.
That's the purple one. That's what the purple one I had was.
No, Road Flare Red is like a really bright orange.
No, I mean the same model.
Right, okay.
The same model of guitar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And like a 91, I think, RG550PL in like a purple.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
Do you have a natural one? I thought you had a natural one.
That was a custom thing that was made with a PGM neck.
Oh, right, I see.
I sold some speakers on eBay one day, and it turned out the guy that bought them was Jaden Rose, the custom builder.
You told me a story, yeah.
Yeah, he builds amazing guitars.
Right, I see.
UK luthier, all sort of RG styles, but with like carved arch tops and things.
Uh-huh.
Really nice metal instruments. And anyway, he bought them, and I sort of sent him an email and said, rather than pay for these, do you want to make me a body?
Amazing.
So I sent him to Celestian, I think they were greenbacks he bought, that I'd taken out an old Hughes & Kettner Triumph cab.
Right.
And he sent me this Swamp Ash solid body, no Floyd, put a Gotto fixed bridge on it, had a Damasio Super Distortion in the bridge and a Duncan Quarter Pounder in the neck, just single coil and humbucker, like the old RG.
Is it gone, this guitar?
Yeah, I sold it in bits. Oh. I just wasn't playing it.
He sells everything in bits. He always takes his guitars apart. Yeah, yeah. And then
it's because I always put them together. Like, I put love into those. I'll take the love back.
I think, we're talking about your guitars, we have to mention your ridiculous pickup setup that you have going on in your Strats.
You try and
make your Strats not sound like Strats, and you actually have a fake pickup in your guitars. And I really want you to explain to the listeners how that works.
I play like I have spanners for hands, and I have a very undelicate picking hand, so I pick really deep, and I've never got on with middle pickups for that reason.
Right.
So I think Richie Blackmore had a similar thing, which is why I always used to take the middle pickup out. And he only ever played with the two. I always used to set the middle pickup really low, which then makes it useless because it's so quiet.
Yeah.
So I started messing around, and I took to wiring up my Strats like a Baja Telecaster, because I used to have a Baja Telecaster that I really liked, where you have like the what would be your normal neck position is both pickups on, wired in series, so they're like a big humbucker, and you get a little bit of a gain boost, and then neck pickup, and then both pickups on together like a normal Telecaster, and then bridge pickup. So it's just so you've got that extra little bit of drive should you need it or want it.
Yeah,
and it just sounds not like a Strat or a Tele, and a bit more muscular.
Mm.
Plus, my black Strat has had so many different pickup sets in it over the years, sort of through. I used to sort of repair and fit pickups and repair a few guitar things. So whenever anybody was having pickups refitted, I'd always sort of offer to either do it for free and sort of keep their pickups if they didn't want them.
Yeah.
Or sort of do a trade for their old pickups, just because secondhand pickups don't go for much.
Mm.
And I thought it'd be a good way to mess around with stuff.
Yeah, get to know the pickups.
You did mine for free and didn't keep my pickups. You could have kept my pickups.
That's why that bass is broken. I've sort of tried various different pickups in it, but for the neck, I always come back to the original single coil that was in it. Everything.
Really?
Nothing I've tried sounds as good as that.
What were Fender even putting in at that time? It wasn't even...
They hadn't even
got to custom shop.
It was just their own thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, they were just their own American standards.
If anything, they weren't really even that highly regarded pickups at the time.
They did sell them as aftermarket pickups for a while afterwards.
Oh, did they?
Okay. Yeah, like way later in like 4 or 5 years ago.
Uh-huh.
I think in 2007, 2008, Fender redid the American Standard range again, like they do every few years.
Yeah.
And they kept those pickups in, and they made a big thing at the time of saying, we've kept the American Standard pickups because everyone seems to like these.
Hmm.
So that was sort of part of their marketing. And it does just sound wicked. I really like it. Somewhere along the way, I inherited a bare knuckle... which is I forget the name, but it's the hottest pickup they do, and they describe it as sounding like a P90.
The Sin? What is it? Is it the Pig 60?
No, it's still a normal
single coil.
Yeah.
Oh, so the Pile Driver.
Yes.
I think because I had a Pile Driver and a Deluxe Tele.
Yeah, you've had quite a few. You're quite big on your bare knuckles pickups.
Yeah, all my guitars have got bare knuckles in them. Yeah. I trade them all out for bare knuckles. Yeah.
So yeah, I've got a what we believe to be a pile driver in the bridge, but it's got the brass bass plate.
Yeah.
So it sounds even bigger again.
Yeah.
And the bridge pickup just... Ben Uckle are really on the money when they describe that as a muscular sounding pickup.
It's like a ceramic Alnico 5, something ridiculous.
It just
it's like
sounds
500k.
Crazy.
Yeah. It's so powerful.
It's wicked. Yeah. So yeah, that's
not
like,
really noisy though.
No, it's all right.
I mean, it fires pretty quiet.
Yeah, it works pretty well. I mean, my setup's quite noisy anyway because the effects loop in my twin is noisy.
Right. Mm.
And running all the cables and stuff gets quite noisy. So yeah, it's sort of hard to know where the noise is coming from, really, whether it's that or the fact I'm not very good at playing my guitar. Yeah.
Probably that.
So yeah, that's one. And then I've got another parts caster with a sort of off-white nitro-finished body and a solid rosewood Warmoth neck. And that's got a Duncan twang banger in the bridge. Worst pickup name ever.
Yeah.
But again, it's...
Twang banger.
It's like a Strat pickup with a brass bass plate. So it's got all that top-endiness.
Yeah, yeah. I thought you were going to get rid of that though now because you've just bought a Rode Telly.
Yeah, I might do. I don't know. I'll see how things go.
Have you sorted out the telly yet? Because I know you were having trouble.
Well, I put some compensated saddles on it.
Yeah.
I tend to play a lot of weird, sort of big, stretchy chords.
Yeah, I think I should point this out to people that there is nothing at all wrong with the bridge that comes on a Rode Worn Telecaster. It is, again, just that Luke plays with the lowest action in the human world and in really weird tunings.
Yeah, and I want the world to know I'm playing a really low action. Yeah. I want it to buzz horribly.
Definitely.
I don't want to cheat people. I want them to get what I'm doing. So yeah, bought that as well. And that's most of my setup at the minute. I've got a cheap old acoustic, late 70s, early 80s Ibanez RS-1000. Washburn N4.
Oh, you still got that?
Yeah.
That's a great guitar.
Yeah, I'm into that.
I need to get that back.
Well, you've got like a Nuno Bettencourt tattoo, haven't you?
I've got two Nuno Bettencourt tattoos. Oh, I'm such a fanboy.
You are a fanboy. I actually think maybe for next week, I might get you to write down the complete lists of your current setups just so that I can maybe come up with some sort of point scheme and work out which one's the biggest geek.
That is all fine.
Yeah. We've come to the end of time for this podcast.
Oh really?
We're actually running over. I have here, as always, a list of questions from the podcast group. I also have a few questions that I was going to ask Luke and Joss, but their equipment is so incredibly vast that we haven't got onto any of those questions. So I think probably for the first time ever, this is going to be a to be continued podcast, and we're going to have to pick up where we left off next week. And basically all the stuff that, because this is still, I've got sort of like a note on here to say, like, talk to Joss and Luke about their setup for about 20 minutes. It's been an hour and four minutes so far.
That probably was 20 minutes of chat and 44 minutes of gibberish waffle. Yeah.
That, my friend, is how the podcast works.
Yeah. Yes. Don't forget I mentioned my chicken pie Steve Vai story.
Yeah, we got that whole story in. That was good. Yeah, we enjoyed that. Probably the highlight. But thank you very much, everyone, for tuning in to this, the first episode of the all-new GAK Guitar Shop podcast. Sorry it's been so long since we've put one out.
Since we started this.
Yeah. Because I think we announced we were going to put stuff out, and then there's been a bit of a delay whilst basically I was sorting out who I was going to do the podcast with. Now, this is the core team for the podcast from now on, the three of us. But we are going to have additional members coming in from week to week. So we are going to have Jay Cross from the original podcast team. He's going to be back on it. We're also going to be introducing another new fella, James Singer, who is the Fender expert over in the guitar shop. Who I think will be a really interesting person for everyone to meet, just because he's into all his like chicken picking country stuff, and I don't think we've ever had anyone on here who can really talk from an experience perspective about the sort of gear that's suitable for that side of things. So I'm really looking forward to
I've
having
I've got two compressors. Him.
You do have two compressors. That is true, Dick Taft. You also have heavy metal tattoos and stuff like that. But yeah, so we'll have him on, and maybe we'll have like a few other people on as the sort of series progresses, and we'll see how it goes. But thank you very much for tuning in to the all new JOK Guitar Shop podcast. I have been your host, Joe Branton. You've been listening to Joss Allen and Luke Taft. If you want to ask us questions, which we will answer on this podcast, then please do so. Go to the Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds group. You can ask us anything on there, and we will endeavor to answer it on the podcast. Gentlemen, how can people get hold of you if they need to? I'll start with myself, because I guess I haven't spoken you through the format of how this works. So people, if you want to get hold of me, you can do on Twitter at Yosef_900. You can also email me at joe.branton@gak.co.uk. Luke Taft, how can people get hold of you?
I don't really do Twitter.
No, that's fine.
Luke.taft@gak.co.uk.
Yeah, there
would
you
probably
go.
Be the best
you can
way.
That. Yeah, and of course, or to be honest, the best way, guys, is to just talk to us on the Facebook group, because then we're all in the same community and it makes more sense. Joss Allen, how can people get in touch with you?
Three different platforms for me. You can go onto the GAK Vision YouTube page and you can ask me a question on any of the video comments below. You can go onto my Instagram, just type in Joss Allen and you'll find me there. And obviously the same as the other chaps, joss.allen@gak.co.uk.
It is Allen, A-L-L-E-N. That's the boys one. And girls. So yeah, find him on Instagram, because he puts up some rad stuff on the Instagram channel. It's really interesting. Cool. Well, thanks very much, boys. I hope everyone out there has enjoyed this first podcast. And yeah, cheers. I'll see you again next time. Bye.
Bye. See ya.